The views expressed in this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware.
WVUD and UD Information Technologies present Campus Voices, conversations with University of Delaware faculty, staff, and students about their teaching, research, service projects, and other interests. To introduce today's guest, here's your host, Richard Gordon, manager of the IT Communication Group at the University of Delaware.
Thank you, Jason. And joining me live in the studio today, we've got Ivan Henderson from University Museums, who's brought with him a very special guest, Bob Strait. Thank you so much for coming and joining us here on Campus Voices.
Good morning.
Now, you're down here. Ivan's brought you down here because you're a UD art professor, been teaching here since 1980. You're a painter, and you're a mentor to UD undergrads and grad students. And you've exhibited your works from coast to coast, including right now you've got an exhibition up in the Old College West Gallery right here on the UD campus. And it'll be there through June 27th. It's called Strategy and Structure.
Right. And probably you're wondering how I came up with that title for the exhibition. Those are two things that constantly have been on my mind as I've been working for the past 40 years. Strategy is, to me, how you approach a painting. How can you make a painting that has some sort of relevance to this point in time? And then structure is how you put a painting together. How do you take those tools that an artist uses and make something, again, that has some relevance to the current point in time?
I think another thing I noticed about your canvases is that there's often a lot of different structures in each work.
Right. And I have used a number of really kind of ordinary things in the work over my career as a painter. A lot of geometric forms. They're kind of the basics for me, and they are so usual that they can be pushed in a number of different ways and become other things besides just a geometric configuration.
I think that one of the things I like about your works, as mentioned by Sid Sachs in the introduction to the catalog to your show, which, Ivan, they can get this for free just by going to Old College, right?
Yeah, certainly. You don't have to sign up for anything. Just grab one while you're there.
And it's really great because it's got about a dozen of the works that are in the show. But Sid says that because you're an abstract artist, your paintings are inventions that refer to many things in the world, and that's true. But these shapes that you were just talking about, the circles and things like that, they're all recognizable forms, but they're combined in different ways.
That's right. You know, when I started out as an undergraduate student, and the first images that I was drawn to were based on representational things in the world. And early on, I decided that if I was going to replicate things in the actual world, that probably photography would be a better medium. And for that reason, I sort of gave up the idea of something representational and decided that it's what I really wanted to set out doing was invent my own world, try and somehow use elements that I could manipulate that became more than just, say, a geometric formation or a repetition of forms that everyone knew.
That almost sounds like something a surrealist would say, except you're not quite doing the same kinds of things.
Right. Yeah, the surrealists were more, I think, into a kind of mental state. Not that I'm not, but surrealism to me always has this kind of, I'm going to say, weirdness to it that I don't really go for. Anyway.
There are no melting clocks in Bob Strait's paintings. I think the surrealism, seriously, has got things in it that are sort of deconstructing, whereas I sense in your work that, you know, with the different structures that are there, the different geometric shapes that are there, there's an abstract pattern, and you're inviting the reader, or the reader, inviting the viewer to construct a world as they look at your work.
Right. And my hope is that each individual that looks at the work will be able to confront it and figure it out in their own way, and perhaps it'll have a different meaning for as many different people as look at it. You know, the paintings are numbered. I use a numbering system to identify each painting, and I started out in the beginning, probably around 1970, with painting number one. And right now I'm up to 500 and some. But the reason for this is rather than giving a painting a title, which kind of gives the viewer a hint of what the artist is thinking about, I'm really, I want to leave it as open as possible. So when you see a painting that's numbered, that the title is P452, really, that doesn't mean anything. It's only an identification.
When we talked about your works, when we actually met at the exhibit, Strategy and Structure, over there in the West Gallery in Old College, one of the things you were telling me also about the naming is it sort of gives a sense of this is a continuing, ongoing process.
That's right. And, you know, these paintings, as they continue... One painting sort of opens up avenues for the next painting. So in a sense, there's a real lineage of how one painting follows the next painting. And sometimes it's surprising how the direction of my work changes. I'm not always thinking ahead of time. It's sort of like when I'm into one painting, I'm really thinking about how that's going to be finalized. And then oftentimes there will be questions or things that pop up in that painting that takes me right into the next painting. It's something that I want to explore further. So I know a lot of artists start out with kind of a premise that they're going to do a series of works. And I always think of my paintings as individuals. Each one is its own thing. And it sort of fosters the next, almost like the next generation.
Each one is its own thing, but it's all part of one continual process, one continual developing vision.
That's right. You know, part of the process, how you make a painting, how a painting is structured, it is ongoing. The process, how you put the paint down, how, you know, what order do you do things? A lot of my painting is about not only putting paint on the canvas or onto the panel, but removing it. And so the sequence of events is really important. The paintings actually become a record of this ongoing situation. So as I look back on paintings, oftentimes I forget how I actually made them. But at the time, that sequence is really important. Painting too is it to me. It's really fascinating because it's such a simple material. It's like pigment in a vehicle. Anyone can do it, so it's wide open. And you really have to make sense of what you're going to use it for and what your goals are.
That actually raises a point that folks, if you go to this exhibit, don't expect to see just paint on canvas. Bob does work mostly in acrylics, but you've done a lot of different kinds of things, worked with a lot of different kinds of material in addition to the acrylics.
I think of an ongoing kind of situation, and I know this happens to every artist. At some point, you usually kind of get stuck. What's going to happen next? And I've always gone on the premise that once you hit a block of some sort or you feel that you've exhausted an idea, then maybe is what you should do is go in the reverse direction. So oftentimes, you know, if I've been working really large on large paintings and it seems like I have exhausted what I'm after, then maybe the next thing I'll do is go for really small ones. Or if I've been using a lot of color, moving to a monochromatic painting sometimes shakes things up enough that it gets your ideas flowing and opens up new avenues.
You also have, you know, paste different kinds of objects on your paintings and that kind of thing. You've worked some different materials. So, for example, when the webpage for this episode goes up, we've got a picture of you posing next to a 1973 work, P55, which is actually a papier-mâché construction.
That's right. And it's covered with acrylic paint that has other materials mixed into it, seltzer and sawdust. And then the paint is really thickened up so that it's got a real impasto to it. So when you see this painting, it is kind of a relief form. As Richard said, it's based on a circle that's divided into quarters and thirds. And it's also divided horizontally as it comes off the wall into segments. And those segments are almost like a layer cake, so that the outside of it is covered with a really heavy impasto that's got seltzer in it, so it's almost like frosting. And then you move down to the next layer and then the layer beyond that. And when I made those paintings, I was thinking about really impasto paintings by artists like Van Gogh and how the paint was so thick in some of the paintings. What would it be like if instead of looking at the surface of the painting, you cut it and sliced it so that you could see the layers of paint? So those particular paintings at that point in time were about those different layers, like a topography of the painting.
Sort of a meta work, a work about the work and the process of making paint and the work of what other artists have done through time.
Sure, and that's so important. I think, you know, looking back on history, and painting has this long history, in order to keep your ideas fresh and moving and not just repeating history, but using it to your advantage is something I try and do.
That's a good point, not repeating, but using it to your own advantage.
Right, and I think that's important for anyone who's in the studio working to be aware of what's going on around them, what people are doing at this point in time, what it means, what it meant when artists in the past painted in particular ways or made images in a particular way. All of that's so important so that you can use it but not necessarily repeat it.
Two of my favorite pieces in your exhibit up at Old College, which is still called Strategy and Structure, just like it was when we began this interview, are two big green canvases, I think, from about 2010, including one that we'll have up at the website, www.udult.edu/campusvoices, number P459, which is got a mixture of recognizable shapes. They're like fan shapes, they're circles, they're ellipses. And it looks like there's an overlying grid, and then almost like an organic kind of thing growing around the edges of this canvas.
Okay, yeah. A bit about this painting. It has a lot of things in it that I've thought about over a long period of time. There is a spiral in the painting that starts at the edge of the painting and it goes to the center of the painting. And that, to me, is something that seems like a way of showing infinity. And it goes back to the artist Brancusi's work, who I really respect. He did some sculptures that were called Endless Columns. And it was a way of showing in a physical way time and how it goes on forever and ever. And to me, showing that in a work of art that is still not a movie, no movement, is really interesting.
But the spiral goes off the canvas, or in this case, off the wood. It goes off the screen.
Right. And so in this painting, there's a spiral. And there's also, if you look at the painting, you'll see there's a grid in it, which also indicates this kind of infinite space. It could go on forever. But it also alludes to the edges of the painting being a rectangle. And rather than using a really structured grid, I've actually used a more organic grid. And the way I made that was to collage fabric onto the painting. And the woof and weft of the fabric actually becomes kind of a grid. And there's also a kind of fencing that's been in the painting but removed, and that leaves an impression of this kind of grid. So the grid is in there. And then finally, there is a structure that was taken from a photograph of a tree, and that has been laser cut in paper and then collaged onto the painting. So there's this kind of chaotic maze, almost like tree branches, and then this more structured area. So there's two different things going on in the painting.
As you can hear, Bob Strait doesn't just dip his paintbrush into a jar of acrylic paint. He's always thinking about putting new things on to try and expand your opportunity to respond to one of his canvases.
Right, and that's really important. That goes back to this idea of strategy. How do you make a painting? It can simply be, you know, dipping your brush into the paint jar and putting that on the canvas. But I'm much more interested in almost constructing the painting, building the painting in a way more like an architect, I think, where the painting starts out with some kind of structure and then it starts to get a skin on it. How it's made is really relevant to me. I actually have tried to avoid using a kind of signature brush stroke in my painting. I want the paintings to have a kind of anonymous feel to them. I think they probably have a personality, but it's not based on a kind of expressionistic brush stroke.
It's based on the elements you have put into the structure.
That's right.
Not on...
Not the actual, you know, gesture of the paint. And the way that the paint's applied, again, is really important. I was saying that I don't really use a brush, and it's what oftentimes I'll do is actually put paint on, almost like a house painter, and then wipe it off. So there's just a residue of paint, and it's almost like erasing that brush stroke.
Now, in all your works, I mean, I see you use plaids. See, I'm even wearing a plaid shirt today in your honor. So let me get up to the microphone so the folks at home can see. But you use plaids and these grids and geometric shapes, cheesecloth. I mean, they all provide like hooks for a viewer's eyes. Is there a commonality to the places you're trying to lead us in your works? Is there something you're trying to do with these recognizable shapes in your abstract works to lead us somewhere?
In a way, I hope that there are ideas and maybe perhaps a kind of spirituality to the paintings that goes beyond just a picture. When you said hooks, I think that was a good thing. I think, you know, in this world today, there's so many images that happen so quickly. You look on the web, you can see, you know, the whole history of art in 2 seconds. Not really 2 seconds, but, you know, quickly. And painting is specifically about the viewer and the object, and some sort of ongoing way of observing that object and thinking about it. So the ideas in a painting become just as important as what you're looking at. And hopefully I can provoke those ideas.
Now, some of the stuff we talked about when we met with you and Ivan last week were like some of the different influences. For example, a lot of the fabric and textile and plaid kinds of things you put in your work. There's a specific reason for that.
Right. And, you know, a plaid is a grid. So that meshes with my idea of something that reflects the actual edge of the painting. But also, when I was growing up, my mom was a seamstress. She made my clothes and my brother's clothes for a long time. And so one of the things that we did pretty frequently was visit fabric stores. And I spent a lot of time running around these stores, and I think just seeing all those different fabrics and patterns really rubbed off on me. You know, it's something that's just part of my history.
So it gives you the sense of, again, a different, coming up with different designs, different textures, different visual representations of a relatively ordinary thing, fabric.
That's right. And, I'm really sensitive to, surfaces. When you see the paintings, they look pretty smooth. Most of them are pretty smooth. But if you look closely, there are oftentimes a really almost like kind of thin fabric feel to the paint surface.
One last thing about your paintings that I want to ask is it, you know, we've talked about how your paintings have a lot of geometric shapes. We've talked about how, you know, they have a lot of geometric shapes and things that be, you know, like solving different quadratic equations and graphing them. Why are there so many mathematical shapes?
Isn't this crazy? You know, I was a terrible math student in school, and it was my worst subject. But when I took a geometry course, I just loved how you could actually make these configurations and how they meant something. So that must have really stuck, because geometry has always been a big part of my work. And right now, I'm really interested in prime numbers. Paintings are numbers like 3, 5, 7, 11. And the reason that I'm interested in this is that it is, it's like absolute. The number can't be divided any smaller. And so my newest paintings are actually based on these prime numbers. The configurations or the shapes in the paintings will start with, say, 5 points on the rectangle, and then drawing lines from one point to the next. It comes up with a configuration. So for the viewer, that may not be all that important, but for me, it has a kind of meaning to it, and it also gives me a starting point. And then once the painting gets rolling, I can jump off from there, and it gets really complicated. You know, you start thinking about color and texture and all of these formal devices that you can use. But the basics are this numbering system.
You've taught here since 1980. You must enjoy interacting with the students.
Oh, I love working with the students. They keep me on my toes. And, you know, it's a give-and-take situation. Oftentimes, as I'm talking to the students about their own work, I'm also getting ideas or different ways of thinking about my work. So it really is, it's interesting for me. And, gosh, I have such smart students. They know so much about the world beyond just art, that the things they come up with as I assign projects are extraordinary.
You have students who cover the whole range of different styles of art?
Sure. And that's one of the things that I love about the art department here. We don't try and foster a particular look. I know at some schools, everyone kind of paints or draws or does just the same sort of things. And at the university, we have students that are working figuratively. We have representational artists. We have non-objective artists. people working in graphics, you know, so there's really a range of what students do, and the faculty works with those students as individuals.
We have about a minute left. Ivan, I know you're really proud to have brought us Bob Strait and his exhibit, Strategy and Structure. What other exhibits are going on right now in the university museums?
Well, first of all, I certainly am proud of when I sit and listen. Every time I talk to Bob, I learn great new things. So this will enhance what we do in the galleries from here forward. Also this semester in Mechanical Hall Gallery, where we typically display contemporary African-American art, we have an exhibition called Fresh Paint, which Bob actually helped co-curate. And some of the decisions for paintings chosen for that exhibition are based in some of the same principles. I guess some of the reasons for choosing those paintings are some of the same reasons Bob creates his own work. So you'll see some kinship between the work in Mechanical Hall Gallery and the things that you might find in Strategy and Structure. Also in our Mineralogical Museum, we're displaying more recent gifts. Our collection was originally started by a DuPont gift. And so we've built around that original gift, and our curator, Sharon Fitzgerald, has done a lot to sort of discover the history of that collection, and it's a scintillating, scandalous history in some ways, but we'll be learning a lot more about that this spring. The third exhibition, which is also on display in Old College, right next to Strategy and Structure, is a thematic exhibition from the permanent collection called Faces. And it's literally a look at portraiture from across the University Museum's collections. And these are representations of human faces from across cultures, across several different forms of media. So it's a really interesting look at the ways we represent the familiar.
Thank you very much, Ivan. And Bob, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure having you down here. And folks, please go to the Old College Gallery, the West Side, to visit Bob's Strategy and Structure exhibit. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Campus Voices, a collaboration between WVUD, the broadcast voice of the University of Delaware, and UD Information Technologies. The views expressed on this program are those of the individual guests and do not necessarily reflect the official views or policies of WVUD, UD Information Technologies, or the University of Delaware. For more information about Campus Voices and to find archive copies of this and other episodes, visit our website. Using all lowercase letters, go to www.udel.edu/campusvoices. We invite you to tune in every Thursday morning at 8:30 for Campus Voices on 91.3 FM, WVUD, and WVUD HD1, Newark, or online at wvud.org.
Hey, this is Keggy from the Honeydew Drops. Thanks for listening to 91.3 FM, WVUD, and WVUD HD1, Newark, the listener-supported voice of the University of Delaware.
When was war? I know who.